Greetings to all of you in the precious name of that one that we can trust in. And I'm thankful that we can, because without him, without being able to trust our God and our Jesus, we'd be lost in this world, because there's nothing else to trust in. There's nothing else that's sure. There's nothing else that's firm. There's nothing else that has foundation except for Jesus Christ and our God. Back in the evening of February 3rd, 2023, there was a freight train rolling east through Ohio. And somewhere along the track, there was a sensor that noticed that there was a temperature rise in one of the wheel bearings on one of the cars. Temperature hadn't risen to any danger point yet, but there was a problem. Sometime later, another sensor along the track again reported to the crew that the temperature had risen some more in that bearing on that axle on that train car. But again, it was not at a critical temperature at that point. The train kept rolling. Somewhere on down the line, that train passed another sensor along the track, and at that point, the sensor said that the temperature in that wheel bearing is at a critical place. The temperature is too high. Something needs to be done. Something needs to happen to that train car to repair that bearing. The engineer decided they're in eastern Ohio. They're going to try and make it to the rail yard just across the Pennsylvania line and pull into that rail yard there and get rid of that car. Somewhere in Salem, Ohio, there is a video recorded by a security camera in a parking lot of that train rolling by with flames coming out from underneath that one car. A couple miles later, another camera, it caught the same train going by and had severe flames underneath the one car. At 8:45 p.m. in East Palestine, Ohio, that train derailed. Cars piling on top of each other. A fire started, and those cars were full of toxic chemicals. And we all know, most of us remember that happening. We know that there was an explosion, a severe fire, and the flame and mushroom cloud of smoke that went up from that fire became a battle cry and an icon of that train derailment. And because of the political atmosphere in the country at that time, and even today, this, of course, became a political scene and was it was a disaster. And there was chemicals that were released into the air. People began to have issues with their nose, their throat, their eyes burning. There was chemicals that were released into the water. There was many fish that were killed. And there was chemicals, of course, then released into the ground that leached into the groundwater and began to contaminate wells and so forth in the area. Because of somebody's negligence, there was a toxic environment in that town of East Palestine. The title of the message tonight is Toxic Environment. And I'd like to look at a few things tonight that are toxins to us as Christians. Turn in your Bibles to Romans chapter 1. I'd like to read a few verses in Romans chapter 1, beginning at verse 20. It says, "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and to four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up unto uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creatures more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up to vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use unto that which is against nature." And we could keep on reading there, but I'm going to cease reading there. And as we look around us today, we see these things being fulfilled. We see individuals turning against God. We see individuals going against what God commands in the Scripture. We see them going against God's will and plan for mankind. And it is safe and easy for us to look around us and to see this and to decry the state of our nation. And to see how the people around us are living in lust and selfishness and pride, and you go on down the line. And we say that's a toxic environment out there. And it is. But I'd like to ask you the question tonight. Are you willing to take a look inside and see if there's any toxicity not in the congregation here, not in your brother sitting beside you or your sister sitting beside you, but within you, in your own heart? Is there a toxic environment there that can be detrimental to not only you, but those around you? We want to take a look at some of those things tonight. I'm going to make a little illustration over here on the board. As we look at that illustration, we all know that God and Satan do not mix. They do not inhabit the same area. They do not condone or strive for the same things. And we all agree that there is a line between God and Satan. And there has to be. And we spend a lot of time focusing on that line. As an individual, as families, as churches, we spend a lot of time focusing on that line, deciding what is on which side of the line. And I'm not knocking church standards here tonight, don't get me wrong. We need those. We need practical applications to scriptural principles. But we spend a lot of time focusing on that line. I ask you tonight, would it not be better for us to focus on God, have our focus turned towards God and not so much on the line? If we turn our focus on God and we want to draw near to Him and we want to get acquainted with Him and we want to know His will for our lives and we want to know the Spirit of God and we want to know His Word, the line isn't as big of an issue anymore. Now I want to ask you another question. How many of you would say that you want to be on this side of the line? How many of you want to be on Satan's side? How many of you want to go to hell when you die? I don't see a single hand going up, and I didn't expect a single hand to go up. I would have been amazed if somebody would have raised their hand. If we're on this side of the line, and we don't want anything to do with this side of the line, why do we spend so much time so close to the line? Why is that such a big issue to us? Brothers and sisters, I'm not standing up here scolding you because I struggle with the very same thing. Are you willing tonight to be a radical Christian? Are you willing tonight to be fully committed to God no matter what the cost is, no matter what people say, no matter how you look? Are you willing to be a radical Christian? We look at the Old Testament, and we look even in the New Testament. We look at those individuals who were dedicated to God and did many things that are recorded in the Bible that speak of God's power in an individual's life. We think of Abraham, for instance. He was a radical man. Noah was a radical man. People mocked them. People laughed at them. People thought they were strange for the things they were doing. But they were committed to God, and they were radical Christians, so to speak. They were radical God-fearing people. And it didn't matter what the people around them said. How about you today? Or we want to be good. We want to be good enough to be on that side of the line. We don't want to be on this side. But we don't want to be the radical one. Why not? I remember as a youth, and I don't say this to point fingers at the youth. I say this as an illustration from my personal life. I remember as a youth, I wanted to be good. I wanted to go to heaven when I die. But I did not want to be radical. I didn't want to be the goody-goody we had all kinds of names for those youth who were radical. Sad to say, we sat around at our youth gathering sometimes and talked about them and laughed about them. Mocked them. I ran with what was known as a cool crowd that in those days. And we did things that We enjoyed. We had a lot of fun. Our parents, you know, were just kind of old school. They didn't understand the changes that were happening. And they were just trying to keep us back in their day. The preachers, you know, they had over the top ideals and were expecting way too much of a young person. That'd be okay for an older person, but a young person, now that's, you know, it's not that important. And truth be told, we all thought we had plenty of time to live and to enjoy life, and then we can settle down and be an old person later on. But to be radical as a youth, no, that was. I had friends, many friends. I had the world by the tail. Things were going great. But because of that feeling of not being fully committed or not being radical in my Christian life, it allowed my heart and mind to be open to suggestions from Satan. It allowed Satan to infiltrate my mind. And I got involved in country music. I got involved in soft rock. I got involved in pornography. I got involved in immoral dating standards. But you know, when I sat in the church bench, I was a good boy. Everything was going fine. Until my world started unraveling. Things started coming out in the open. And then I turned angry. And I turned bitter. I became discouraged. I became despondent. And I lashed out at individuals around me. People just don't understand. They're accusing me of things that aren't true. They're saying things that are way out of line. I don't do those things. They just don't understand. They don't act like Christians. Christians are supposed to love each other, to care for each other, and to encourage each other. And all they're doing is tearing me down. I remember one day, I was talking to my parents, and I told them, you know, it's no use. Why be a Christian? Because it doesn't matter anyway. People around you don't act like Christians. They can preach a good sermon, but they don't act like Christians. They can talk a good talk, but they're not acting like Christians. I said, it's no use even being a Christian. I don't care anymore. And I went into my bedroom and I closed the door. I sat on my bed. I just stared out the window. I was bitter. I was angry. Nobody understood me. I don't know how long I was in there until I heard a knock on my door. And my father asking in a quiet voice if he may come in. I didn't say anything. I didn't tell him he may come in. I didn't invite him in. I just sat there staring out the window. To my parents' credit, they opened the door and came in. I remember my father sitting on a chair at the foot end of my bed, and my mother standing in the doorway. And my father began to talk to me. And I knew what he was going to say. He was going to tell me that I'm seeing things wrong. That people do love me. They do care about me. And I didn't want to hear that. And he began to talk. And he began to share his concern for my life. Not that he hadn't done it before, but he began to share his concern for my life. And finally I told him, "Dad, you may as well just be quiet. Because it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter. I know what people are saying about me. I know what people are thinking about me. And I know they don't care. I know they don't love me. I'm just going to pack up my things and I'm going to go somewhere." I had no idea where I was going to go. Because there's no Christian love around here. My father broke down and began to weep. He bowed his head and he began to pray for me audibly. And I felt in my chest and in my throat, I felt a devilish laugh building. And I had to swallow hard to keep from laughing out loud at my father praying for me with tears in his eyes. I sat there and I thought, "Cliff, what have you become that you would laugh at your father who is praying for your spiritual well-being?" I wish I could say that everything turned around right then and there. I know God spoke to me. I know God worked in my life. Were there signs along the tracks that were warning me of where I was going and what was happening? Yes, there was. Were there individuals that were willing to share with me their concern for my laxness in my Christian life? Yes, there was many. I didn't listen to them. If I would have, I probably could have avoided the train wreck that I became. But there was toxins in my life. There was rebellion, there was bitterness, there was anger, there was pride, and we're going to look at all of those in my life that finally spilled out to those around me, to my friends, to my family, to my church leaders, that spilled out. It was a detriment to me. And it was a detriment to some of my friends who stood by me and said, "Yeah, Cliff, you're right." And I had many of those friends. Are there toxic? Is there a toxic environment in your life, in your heart tonight, that is detrimental to your Christian well-being? That is detrimental to your Christian health, and not only to you, but to those around you? We want to look at some of those things that can be toxic in our own lives. And of course, the first one that comes to my mind when I think of that is pride. And that pride is a big subject, and it might in some ways encompass all the others. And yet, I want to look at that specifically in it, on its own, because of what pride can cause us to do. In Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 18, it says, "Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall." And brothers and sisters, I found that out in the hard way. But you cannot build yourself up on pride and inflate yourself and make yourself look good and have a good foundation under you. Because pride is not a good foundation at all. It's destined to crumble. It's destined to collapse. And you're going to go down with it, just like I did. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, when God had told Saul, "Saul, I want you to go out and totally destroy the Amalekites. Totally destroy them." came back from the battle, and God told Samuel, "You go and meet Saul, because he has not followed my orders. He has not followed my commands. He has not been obedient to me." Saul and Samuel met, and Saul says, he greets Samuel, and he says, "I have fulfilled the command of the Lord." And Samuel says, "Well, what's the lowing of the oxen and the bleating of the sheep that I hear?" And Saul right away, "Oh, the people. The people, they kept the best. They kept the best for sacrifices and offerings. The people, I did what God commanded me to." Samuel tells Saul, says, "When you were little, in your own sight, God set you up as king. But now you've become proud. And you started doing things your own way. And God is not pleased. When you were little in your own sight." Brothers and sisters, are we willing to be little in our own eyes so that God can be in the forefront? Or do we battle with pride? Sometimes we wonder and we decry the problem of our youth. You know, why would they want the car? Why would this young person, this young fellow, want this car? Why would this young lady want this certain kind of dress fabric? Why would she want to comb her hair a certain way? And young fellas, you're not immune to that. Combing your hair certain ways. And we as older ones, why? Why do they struggle with that? Brothers and sisters, parents, grandparents, may it be that there's some pride in our own lives. And our young people are more observant than what we give them credit to be. They see those things. Could it be that the toxic environment of pride in my life can be affecting and influencing the young people? I don't know what your practice is around here. I don't know what the thing is around here, but in our area we have something that is known as the good old boys truck. That pickup that, you know, has all the extras on. Extra lights. Has the tires that stick 3 inches out past the fenders. Has a lift kit in it. It's a four-wheel drive. And it's got to be a diesel, it's got to be a Duramax, it's got to be a Power Stroke, or it's got to be a Commons, and there's a lot of debate as to which one is the best. You all, young people, you know what I'm talking about. Some time ago, I was looking for another pickup. The one that I had was older, didn't think it was worth putting the money into it to fix it up. I was looking for a pickup. And I found just exactly what I wanted. Except it was a diesel, and I wasn't looking for a diesel. I don't use my truck hard enough to necessarily warrant a diesel, but everything else was just what I wanted. And the price was right. I was told by a few individuals that I showed the information to. They said, "Well, if you don't buy it, you let me know because I want to buy it." We went to look at it. I took my son along because I knew if we buy it, I had to have somebody to bring the other vehicle along, bring the other vehicle back. We looked at this thing, and my son informed me, "Dad, if you buy this truck, you're going to have a cool truck." What do you mean? "Well, it's a cool truck. Everybody, you know, everybody likes these trucks." But to me, it was a truck. I was going to use it to go back and forth to work. I was going to use it to haul firewood. I was going to, you know, I was going to use it as a truck. But I found out after I bought the truck, I found out what he meant. Because there were some young fellows from our church that found out that I have this truck, and they were starting to ask me questions about this truck. You know, those things speak to people around us. Now, of course, I know my heart, I know my motives, and I can make all kinds of justifications because I didn't buy the truck because of pride. But brothers and sisters, there's many things in the world today that are clamoring for our attention and trying to impress upon us our need for these things. And in order for us to have a certain level of status, we need to have these things. And pride feeds right into that. And individuals begin to, there's nothing wrong with this. Yeah, it's a good thing. And our young people, very observant, and they say, well, if mom and dad, you know, they have this, so why not? Why mayn't I do this? Is pride a toxic environment in your heart and life? I'll let you answer that question to God. Rebellion is another one. In 1 Samuel there, after Samuel and Saul met, and Saul tried to excuse himself, Samuel says, you know, Saul, to obey is better than sacrifice. And he says, in verse 23 of chapter 15, he says, for rebellion is as a sin of witchcraft. Now, you Bible students, you know that in the Old Testament, in the lives of the children of Israel, God had commanded that all witches and soothsayers and those types of individuals had to be put to death because they were using the power of Satan and not of God. And he wanted to cleanse his people from that influence. And he said that they need to be put to death. Now Samuel here is telling Saul, rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. In other words, it needs to be put away. It needs to be killed before it kills you. Rebellion will kill your spiritual life. I don't care if it's rebellion against your parents. I don't care if it's rebellion against the church. I don't care if it's rebellion against the national authorities. If you are living in rebellion, you are not appropriating yourself to the full power of God. You have sin in your life that separates you from God. Rebellion is a deadly sin. You know, there's some individuals that say, well, I don't believe this. I don't believe that's what the Bible says. Story is told of a minister that went to see an older parishioner. And when he got there, he asked if he should read something from the Bible. And the old man said yes. And he gave him his Bible, and the minister opened it up, and there was pages missing. There was sections cut out of pages that were there. And he said, What is this? What?" And the old man said, well, he said, for years I've heard you preach. And you would read passage of scripture and you would say, well, that isn't meant for our day, or it wasn't quite, you know, it's not meant quite like it says there, you know, we don't practice that anymore. So I went home and I said, you know, why is it in the Bible? And I cut it out. Sometimes we in our own lives, we start cutting things out because there's rebellion in our heart and we don't want to obey certain things. Brothers and sisters, tonight, I ask you this question. We expect our children in our homes to obey us. And if we don't, there's punishment. In the nation that we live in, there are laws, there are rules, there are regulations, and we are expected to live by them. If we don't, there are consequences, there is punishment. We understand that. And we say it has to be that way in order for things to work. When I'm driving down the highway, and there's a person comes in the side street and there's a stop sign there, I expect them to obey. I don't expect them to just pull out in front of me. Why do we think that God isn't the same way? Why do we think that we can pick and choose the things that we want, the things that please us and the things that don't? Why do we think that we can rebel against the creator and sustainer of the universe and our own lives and decide what we're going to listen to and what we're not going to listen to? And we can make excuses. But brothers and sisters, there's a toxin in our lives that is leaking out and causing problems, not only for us, but for those around us. The root of bitterness is another one. Hebrews 12 and verse 15 says, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. That root of bitterness, that harboring bitterness, and you might not think it as this, you might make excuses, you might say that, well, you know, yeah, I've forgiven that person, but, you know, there's some things that are still bugging you. Maybe that person hurt you 15 years ago, or maybe you think that person did something that hurt you 15 years ago, and you've kind of pressed it down. And yes, I've forgiven him, but that root is still there because you have not released that individual. You have not from your heart forgiven. You've said it, but you still hold that grudge. You still hold that bitterness. I remember some time ago, we had some kind of a little weed tree or something growing in our my wife's flower bed around the grape arbor that we have there at home. And I tried to dig it out, and I couldn't. I cut it off a couple times, but it kept sprouting back. And finally, I got tired of it, and I took a strap of some kind that I had, and I wrapped it around real tight, and I hooked that strap to the back of my pickup, and I yanked that tree out. And there's a clump of roots came out, pulled it out, and there was a big long root, maybe about an inch and a half thick, and it went away from that tree about 4 or 5 feet. And on that root, there was like two little shoots coming up for other trees. Oh, okay. So that's why we were having problems. This is the culprit right here, and it sent out a root and had other trees coming, little trees coming up. So I decided, okay, I'm going to get rid of this. And I started pulling, and it didn't want to come up out of the ground real easy, but I kept pulling, and I pulled another couple of feet, and finally it came out of the flower bed and went out into the yard, and I decided, okay, it's out there in the yard. If the trees start coming up there, I can mow them off. But I didn't know that root was there. I couldn't see it under the ground, but I could see the little shoots coming up. And that's how bitterness is. It can be hidden. You have it way down, buried deep in your heart. But every now and then, those little shoots come up. You meet that individual that you have a grudge against, or you have bitterness, you're holding bitterness in your heart against. Or even other individuals. You have a hard time relating to other people because of that bitterness that's down in there. And if somebody slights you just any little bit, that root of bitterness shoots right up. And it says that root of bitterness springing up trouble you. And it can be very troublesome at times. But the sad part about it is it doesn't stop there. It says, and thereby many be defiled. That root of bitterness in your heart will affect other individuals. It will affect your relationships between you and other individuals. It'll affect your relationship with your brothers and sisters in the church. It will affect your relationship with your friends and your family. If you harbor bitterness, because that one root being there makes it so much easier for another one to develop. You need to take care of that root of bitterness. That toxic environment that is in there, just festering and just every now and then shooting up its ugly little head here or there, and you try and cut it off and you try and get rid of it so people don't see, but it keeps coming up. There's no way to get rid of it except to pull it out, to get rid of the root. You can keep cutting off the top as often as you want to, but it's the root that needs to be taken care of. One last one that I thought of. Have you ever heard somebody say, well, I don't see it that way? Or, I don't have a conviction for or against that. I want things my way. Those statements sound very much like is what we're hearing in the world today around us. It's my truth. My truth. You might not see it that way, but it's my truth. And you can't say anything about it. Paul, in Acts 24, verse 16, when he stood before Felix and he was giving his testimony before Felix, he said, and herein do I exercise myself to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. Do you think Paul was saying, well, it's my truth. I don't really care what you think. You just go and live your life. You let me live mine. Paul was concerned about what his life did for other people. Paul wanted his life to be an encouragement to other people. Paul wanted his life to be a challenge to other people. Paul wanted his life to be, excuse me, to be teaching other people the right way to live. I don't believe that we can go through life not caring what our life does to other people, because I just don't see it that way. That is a seed that will spread. That is a toxin in our lives that will spread to those around us, and it will spread rapidly. Because many times, when I don't see it that way, I want to make sure that I have other people around me that don't see it that way as well. Again, going to the laws of the land. You're going down the highway and the speed limit says 45 and you're doing 60 and the police officer pulls you over. And you say, well, officer, I don't see it that way. It's a wide open road. You think he's going to say, okay, well, that's fine. I don't think so. He's going to say the speed limit says 45 and you were doing 60 and therefore I am going to write you a ticket. You're going to get a fine. Again, I ask the question, why do we feel like we can do that in our Christian life between us and God. Reading a few verses out of Romans chapter 1 again, some verses that come just before the ones that I read in the opening. Verse 16 says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith." Brothers and sisters, tonight, if there are any toxins in your life, be assured that they're not only affecting you, but they're affecting others. And the only way to get rid of those toxins is to allow the power of God to cleanse you and make your life clean and new. May God bless you.